Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. New governors are being sworn in all over the country this month, but there's not a lot to celebrate in statehouse budgets. 46 out of 50 states face yawning budget gaps. $15 billion in Illinois, $25 billion in California. Republicans and Democrats are talking austerity and cuts. Illinois just broke ranks in a big way with a 67% state income tax hike. Is this the future? This hour On Point, fiscal houses on fire and states weighing what to do. You can join the conversation. Does a 67% income tax hike, Illinois style, sound like lunacy or necessary medicine to you? Where's the axe coming down in your state? Where should it come down? And what about taxes? And you can comment on our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. It was late at night, and the big tax hike in Illinois went through. In a press conference last Thursday, the newly sworn-in governor, Pat Quinn, a Democrat, defended, not a single Republican voted for this, defended his new tax bill that raised the 3% flat tax income tax there up to 5% for the next 4 years, a hike of 67%. He says here the hike is temporary, but it was necessary.
We have an emergency, a fiscal emergency. Our state was careening towards bankruptcy and fiscal insolvency. It's important for the state government not to be a fiscal basket case, and that's what I confronted when I arrived. Our house was burning. Our fiscal house was burning in Illinois.
A fiscal basket case, the house on fire. Joining me first today from Springfield, Illinois, is Ray Long, State House reporter for the Chicago Tribune. He's been following the whole tax hike story. Ray, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom.
Describe exactly how and when, what time of day, this all got passed by the Illinois State Legislature.
Well, the final vote came in the Illinois Senate, and that was at 1:30 a.m. That was just around 10 hours before the whole new General Assembly would be sworn in. So they didn't have much time. Their backs were against the wall.
This was a lame duck legislature there doing it at the last minute. What were they up against? Why such a big hike? What made this necessary in their eyes anyway, Ray?
Well, Tom, of course, you mentioned that they could be hitting a $15 billion deficit in the budget here. And what happened was that this had built up over time and over years, and overspending caused it. And the cause of it was because they just couldn't rein in their desire to keep programs going. Now they're faced with the possibility of having to cut back programs as well as trying to pump in new money to try to get the whole structural budget straight away.
Ray, 67% sounds like an enormous hike. I mean, it is. On the other hand, I'm reading here that that's only going to raise about $6 billion, $6.5 billion, something like that. And I think everybody's saying, you're saying Illinois has a $15 billion gap. So with that,
right, it's going to take some time. And that's one reason they put it in for 4 years. A lot of people think that that temporary nature of this tax may be just a joke, really, because a lot of people think that this will stay in place because Illinois has been so allergic to trying to have fiscal restraint. But the $6.5 billion hole was what they were having to fill, because that's how much more spending they were doing over revenue coming in.
And as I understand it, Ray, that's how much they owe in bills due. Never mind what's coming here, but in bills they've already racked up.
Right. Another huge piece of that $15 billion is $6, $7, $8 billion in bills that have been hanging for months and months and months and months. It's basically borrowing from all of the vendors and even state schools that have a need and have been expecting money coming in. They just didn't pay them. So now they're still trying to figure out how to get those places paid off quickly. They're talking about and actually tried to pass an $8 billion borrowing package so that they could get that money into those places, all those social service agencies and such that treat mental health patients and substance abuse patients and things like that, are not getting paid right now. So they want to, the lawmakers want to get some of that money out there. They'd see it as kind of a stimulus, but it's actually paying the backlogged bills.
Borrowing to pay for services already consumed. This is real money for families there. I'm reading here what for a family of four in Illinois earning about $60,000 a year, the household, this new income tax would add about $1,040 to their state tax bill. That's on top of what they're already paying. I mean, Illinois is still well shy of the highest state income tax rates in the country, but that's a big hike.
Right, and Illinois property taxes are somewhat higher as a result of the income tax not being near the top in the nation. So a lot of people are complaining about their income taxes, but they're also paying big property taxes at the same time.
What has the popular reaction to this been? We'll look at the business piece of it, but just from regular rank-and-file taxpayers, are they saying, yes, we've got to get our house in order, or no, or what are you hearing, Ray?
Well, the reasonable people are saying, hey, you know, if we can get it straightened out, then great. But a lot of people are not being reasonable, and a lot of people are downright angry. In fact, I would say that the angry folks are the bigger class of people out there, because a lot of them just couldn't figure it out. One thing is that Governor Quinn had campaigned up front about saying we need an income tax increase. Hmm. He was talking about a 33% income tax increase. Then overnight, there was discussion in the waning days of the lame duck session of taking it to 67%. And, of course, even before that, they had hinted at maybe going to 75%. So people were just up in arms in Illinois, and my email box was loading up with people who were ready to carry pitchforks to the state capitol.
It's not only individual taxes hiked here, also a 45% increase in the corporate tax, which puts Illinois up among the highest in the country on that score. Governors, neighboring governors, Wisconsin to your north, and as far as Chris Christie in New Jersey, saying they're going to come and woo Illinois businesses away. Is that what we're going to be in here, Ray? A kind of national race, a national competition on tax and who's going to woo whom?
Right. It's really a big avalanche of invitations that are coming into Illinois from governors in other states. Governor Quinn in Illinois just suggests that, well, these companies are not going to leave. But over the last few years, we've seen an increase in fees on businesses in Illinois, and a lot of them have been complaining that the taxes are already too high. So they're ready to shut down and leave. And we've heard some people just saying, this is it. This is the final straw.
Scott Walker, right across the border there in Wisconsin, new Republican governor there, saying, hey, come on north. Ray Long with the Chicago Tribune, right where it's been happening in Springfield, Illinois. We're grateful to you for being with us today. Ray, thanks very much for joining us.
Great to be here, Tom. Thank you.
Joining me now from Urbana, Illinois, is J. Fred Gertz, professor of economics, faculty member at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois, executive director of the National Tax Association. He's an expert on public finance, regional economic development, expenditure analysis, local taxation, the whole megillah. Fred Gertz, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good to be here. Happy to be with you.
What are you saying, thinking about this big income tax hike? Was it overdue? Was it inevitable? Should it have been headed off years ago? How do you see what just happened in your state, Fred?
Well, Ray made some very good points, and I think most of what he said applies very directly to your question. Illinois' problem goes back for quite a long time. Many, many years ago, we began to underfund our pensions, kind of implicit borrowing from the pension system. Things became worse. Most of your listeners are aware of former Governor Rod Blagojevich in terms of his ethical lapses, but his policy lapses were equally severe. He came into office in 2003. The state of Illinois had a large shortfall at that time, and for the rest of his term, until he was impeached and removed from office, he basically said that no one should pay for government services and we shouldn't contract our spending. So we had a period when we kept spending as usual, even though we had very severe economic issues, and we didn't face any kind of prospect of a tax increase. So I think voters became used to the kind of something-for-nothing philosophy, and that continued. And when Governor Blagojevich was removed, Governor Quinn came in, and for the next two budgets, they did more of the same. Every year, we were appropriating or planning to spend $6 or $7 billion more than we had available, and that simply couldn't go on. So we didn't face a very, you might be, not be surprised to learn, we didn't face some very good choices. There's a saying, something that Ernest Hemingway wrote in The Sun Also Rises, and someone asked another person, how did you go bankrupt? The answer was, at first gradually and then suddenly. Well, Illinois had been moving towards insolvency in a gradual way, but we got to the point where it was going to be sudden. So we didn't really face a very good choice at that point. And the other thing that I think listeners should be aware of is that the Tea Party did not reach the state of Illinois at the state level. We did elect a Republican senator. We did replace a number of Democratic U.S. representatives. But at the state level, returned to office the governor, who was a Democrat. We returned to office Democratic majorities in both houses, who had basically presided over the mess we're in. So it's not surprising that that they didn't go in for really severe cuts.
Fred, we just got 20 seconds before the break. Do you feel in this pickle all alone, or do you think we're going to see other states around the country, much as their governors may say no, taking the same kind of step, having to do it, being up against the wall or fiscal house on fire, as your governor says?
Well, I think Illinois was worse than most other states, so I think most other states have some other options. And a house on fire is a little bit of a misnomer, because the fire was set by the people who were in charge.
Yeah.
So I think that's not a very good excuse, but Illinois had very few options at this point. I think they should have had much more severe spending cuts, but they chose to go the tax route.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about state budgets in turmoil, big deficits, blood on the floor, cutbacks, and now Illinois hiking its state income tax overnight by 67%. New governors coming in talking about this all over the place. Many saying no to more taxes and yes to big cuts. But there are some huge deficits out there. Biggest of all, California. In his inaugural address early this month, California's new governor, he's back, Jerry Brown, noted early in his speech his greatest concern, that budget.
No more smoke and mirrors on the budget, no empty promises. With your help, that's exactly what I intend to do. The budget I present next week will be painful, but it'll be an honest budget. It's a tough budget for tough times.
No more smoke and mirrors, says Jerry Brown. Newly elected Florida Governor Rick Scott, Republican, said in his inaugural address, the government should cut down on regulation, put its financial faith in the private sector.
Faced with a deep recession, some say the answer is to expand the role of government. That's the approach the administration has taken in Washington. That is absolutely the wrong approach.
Florida faces a $4 billion budget shortfall. California, $25 billion shortfall. Last Tuesday, in his first State of the State address, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie talked about Illinois and reconfirmed his pledge not to raise taxes in his state, which faces a $10 billion budget gap.
Illinois has chosen a very different path than ours. They're in the throes of debating a 75% increase in income tax rates. Is that what we want for New Jersey? No. We need to balance the budget again. Next month, I'll present to you my budget for fiscal year 2012, and I'll guarantee you this. It will be balanced, and it will not raise taxes.
Balanced, no new taxes. Many people saying that. Maybe not everybody will be able to keep that pledge. Chris Christie now, jokingly maybe, saying he's going to fly out to Illinois and try and snag some of those businesses facing higher corporate taxes there. Fred Gertz joins us this hour. He's a professor of economics at the University of Illinois. Joins us from Urbana, Illinois. With us as well right now from Washington is Susan Uran, Managing Director of the Pew Center on the States, a division of the Pew Charitable Trusts that helps states identify and implement fiscally sound policies. Susan, thank you very much for being with us.
How are you?
I'm good. How lonely should Illinois feel here? 46 out of 50 states have big budget gaps. Are Illinois and California in a class of their own, or are other states, Susan, going to have to consider not just big cuts, but also tax hikes?
Well, there are plenty of states that are facing these kinds of challenges. So I think Illinois and California, they may be ahead of the pack, but they've got a good deal of company. I think it's really important to understand just a couple things. So if you kind of take a look back, the Government Accountability Office did a really interesting study last year as they were beginning to get concerned about states' fiscal health. And they took a 50-year look at where the states were sort of positioning. And what they found was if nothing changed, this was pre-health care reform and just taking a look at current policy, states over 50 years would face nearly a $10 trillion gap, which would mean that over the next 50 years, every single year, states would have to either cut or put in place tax increases to deal with a 12% gap every year for 50 years. So that's before the recession. And then the recession came and the floor fell out in terms of revenue. So what you have is year after year, starting in 2009, states facing extremely severe budget gaps. In some cases, states had year-over-year drops in revenue of 30%. So all told, over 4 years, $400 billion in budget gaps that states have had to close.
Susan, how did states do that? We heard Jerry Brown saying no more smoke and mirrors, but has everybody or nearly everybody been living in smoke and mirror la-la land here?
Well, I think there are states, several states that have what we would call a structural deficit, which means they are simply spending more than they take in. If you look at the expenditure curves of, say, health care, Medicaid, the pensions and post-retirement benefits that they promised to their public employees, those costs are going up, and take a look at health care, 7 to 10% every single year. The revenues are simply not keeping pace. What the states try to do is what they often do when they hit a bump, whether it's a recession or any kind of a fiscal challenge, they have one hit tactics to close budget gaps. So they will do a temporary tax increase. They'll do a fund transfer. They'll postpone paying bills. They'll push a little bit of cost off into the next fiscal year. And that's assuming that the economic growth is going to come back over the next year or so and get them out of their hole. Clearly not an approach that works well given the severity of this recession and the fiscal weakness that underlied a lot of these states when they went into the recession because of those structural problems.
Fred Gertz in Illinois, here it is, a 67% hike in personal income taxes, state income taxes, plus cuts. Illinoisans will feel that in their pocketbook when they have to pay those taxes. What about on the cuts side? Are they dramatic enough that people are going to feel them in their daily life? Where will they, or where have they, shown up in Illinois?
So far, they haven't shown up to the extent they probably should have. Illinois' procedure was very much like was just described. We had a bunch of expedients, temporary kind of things, selling assets, borrowing money, fund transfers, things of that sort, and spending wasn't really reduced a great deal. The final straw came when the state of Illinois simply stopped paying its bills in a timely way. So people haven't really seen the huge cuts yet, and that's one of the criticisms of the bill that was just approved. There were most of the people in the state realized we had to have a twofold attack on the problem, somewhat higher taxes and severe austere kind of spending cuts. We chose to go the route of taxes first, so a lot of people are very unhappy that we didn't take the spending discipline seriously, and that's going to have to come later. And the question is, will it actually come or not? And the jury is still out there. Illinois has gotten a kind of a temporary reprieve now, and the question is whether we'll use that reprieve to actually put our house in order, which means to go ahead with some important cuts, or whether we'll use that as another temporizing measure to defer our problem for a couple of years, and no one knows the answer yet.
Susan Uren, there's a big hole here. Whether it's taxes, you know, out of pockets or cutbacks on state spending, that looks like a lot of cash out of state economies. And if you multiply it by 50 or 46, how big a threat is this to the national economy? Does it add up to a real threat to what everybody hopes is a recovery here?
Well, I think that's one of the most critical questions, and that's certainly why Congress put in place the ERA program to really get the federal stimulus, much of which had aid directly to states to basically provide a cushion.
Now, are you talking last year or this latest congressional lame duck move?
Well, a little bit of both. I mean, the several-year fiscal stimulus sent several billion dollars to states to sort of primarily on Medicaid, but also states a little bit of discretionary revenue that states could use to avoid layoffs of their public sector employees, policemen, teachers. Many of the things that people were afraid would really dampen the national recovery. So I think that there was an attempt to kind of balance those things. But states, that revenue is disappearing this year, and that's one of the big problems that states are going to face as they come into their legislative sessions and look at the budget that they're going to try to put together for fiscal 12. There are no more federal stimulus funds. So it's a real cliff that was created in states as they depended on those funds. They use them to plug gaps. Sometimes up to 40%, people are doing some estimates, and now those have gone away.
So, Susan, if they turn to cuts to try and balance these budgets, they're going to have to be big. How will those show up in the lives of ordinary citizens around the country? What kind of cuts should people be bracing to see?
Well, you can take a look at what they've done the last couple of years to get an indication of where they're likely to go. They have done some cuts in the Medicaid where they could to not lose their federal match. So there you're seeing for folks who are on Medicaid, there's no more dental benefits. They're losing long-term care coverage, aid to people with disabilities. So you're seeing cuts to vulnerable populations, likely to see more of those. Significant cuts to higher education. Virtually every state in the country that had a significant budget gap cut their higher ed budgets. And I think what you are going to see there, where the public will feel that, is in increases to tuition. States are cutting K-12, so you're likely to see increased class sizes, fewer teachers. That's certainly something that the public's going to feel. State parks, government offices maybe only open 3 or 4 days a week. A lot of push to put services online rather than to have offices. So you will see a lot of things coming down in the next year or two that I think the public will feel.
You know, Fred, I wonder how you're looking at all that. Our listeners, you know, are multiplying this by the number of states in trouble and coming to some pretty tough conclusions. Here's one comment online from William who says, America is in decline and may never be the same again. I think America's headed for second world status in another 10 years or sooner. Does it feel that way? You're in the wheelhouse of this, Fred. Does it feel like that, or like there's rebirth in the steps being taken there?
Well, we're at the end of a very serious economic downturn, a financial crisis, a bunch of other things that have come together here. And the United States is going to do well in the long term. We may not always be the very highest per capita income. We're going to be very close to that, and we're going to start growing again. And you know, 50 years from now, we're going to be a whole lot richer than we are today. So I think that's totally unrealistic about what the—
That's reassuring. Thank you. Thank you. I hope you're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think about it, you have to look at the long term, and people think that we're worse off today. We're actually much better off than we were 20 or 40 or 60 or 100 years ago. Life expectancy, consumption levels, level of education, almost every measure, we're better off. Now, you don't want to measure the future based on the last 2 or 3 years, which is really an unusually dire situation for the U.S. and world economy.
But though, as you say, these budget holes have been in the building for years and years, much longer than just this.
Right.
Downturn.
Illinois, though, I want to emphasize that Illinois is not, let's say, sui generis in the sense that we're the only one, but we're almost unique in the sense that we ran up a big shortfall during the good times, and we came into the recession in a deep hole, and that was doubly bad when the recession came. So Illinois was really in a very, very bad situation because of its own lack of discipline. And I think most other states have some problems, but their problems are not, aside from maybe 2 or 3 other states, are not of the same magnitude. But Illinois, on the other hand, is still a very rich and prosperous state. We have a relatively low tax rate before this, and there are ways that we can deal with this. And the most important way is to actually impart some spending discipline to our process, and that's something that has to be done, but we haven't really seen that happen as yet. One other quick point. When you talk about the $15 billion deficit in Illinois, that's true, but it's really twofold. One is like a $7 billion or $8 billion annual shortfall. The
right.
other is a backlog of unpaid bills. So once you pay the unpaid bills, then we have to close a $7 billion shortfall, not a $15 billion shortfall. So if we use this money wisely and accompany it with some major spending cuts, we can get back on the right track again.
Well, that's good. It still looks awfully rough. It's my home state. I love it, and it's embarrassing. I'm just up the pike from you, Fred, and I hate to see it. Tom, let's get our listeners in here. Tom in Narragansett, Rhode Island. Tom, you're on the air.
Thanks, Tom. Great topic. Very important topic, as usual. I work in with a lot of state and federal funding and grants and environmental management, and we see enormous cuts on the way in both federal and state sources of funding, which are closely intertwined, and it filters down to the local level, too. And I think people have been in denial about the level of service they want in terms of clean air, clean water, good roads, good schools, state parks. You could go on and on about what people want, and they don't want to pay for it. And they don't want the mentally ill running around on the streets, untreated.
In Narragansett or in Tucson.
Exactly. And I really honestly think that Republican governors in particular have pandered to the public's sense of denial, and I honestly think that the chickens are coming home to roost here, and that, in a place like New Jersey, Chris Christie can balance the budget, but I think it will be enormously painful. I mean, in Trenton, they've already laid off cops and policemen all over the place. There's, probably 40% unemployment or something like that there. And sure, if that's the kind of country we want, we can have it. But, the one other quick point I'll make, and then I'll get off the air, is that in the macroeconomic sense, I think it's just the absolute worst policy right now. I mean, here in Rhode Island, which has had an anemic economy for a long time, the people I know who are gainfully employed either work in the healthcare sector, or they either work directly or indirectly for government funding, whether they're teachers or engineers who, work for people like me who work on federal grants.
And those are the jobs.
Yeah, exactly. So, if you cut those, and obviously the healthcare is on an unsustainable cost curve right now, and if you then cut the federal and state expenditures out of the equation,
But Tom, can you build an economy in a country or in Little Rhode Island out of healthcare and government jobs?
No, that's exactly what I'm saying. But I'm saying we do need to find new ways of generating economic growth, but. For Scott down in Florida to say, well, he's going to unleash the private sector. Well, the private sector doesn't build roads. The private sector doesn't build airports. California, where Jerry Brown is in the process of putting in a multi-billion-dollar water project to route water from, additional water from the San Francisco.
Yeah, and that'll be a lot of jobs. Tom, I've got the perspective, and I really appreciate it. I want to put it to you, Susan Uran. At heart, some of what Tom's raising there is this question of whether states have been overspending or undertaxing. Here's Isaac in Groton, Connecticut, saying, we've got a civilization, and it needs to be paid for. Is it overspending? Is it undertaxing? Is it both, Susan? What's going on?
Well, I think part of what we're having right now is a reasonably long overdue debate about how much government do we want and are we willing to pay for it. And I think in some cases, because of the way in particular states have handled the financial crunch, the public is getting more government than it's paying for. So I think that's it's a very tough situation that the public needs to sort through. We did a poll last year, and we ended up titling the poll Facing Facts, because what we found was that there was a lot of inconsistency. The public really wants government to deal with the fiscal crisis by cutting spending. That is their preferred approach. And I think, on the other hand, they don't want to cut education. That's very important. They don't want to cut healthcare costs, and those are by far the biggest drivers of government spending. So it is very hard to kind of meet the public where they want to be. So there's some public education that needs to happen.
Is there a quality of life sacrifice that's required here? Or, Fred says this country will be fine over the long haul. Can we still have the quality of life we're accustomed to? Or is that, credit card stuff we can't do now?
Well, I think that's part of what the states are going to need to sort through. There's sort of a dual crunch that's coming here as well. If you look across, sort of on average, the federal government is paying for about 25%. That's what the revenue comes from to the states. Given the federal fiscal problems, that revenue is likely to decrease over time. States are pushing down a lot of costs to local governments, so there's also going to be service cuts there.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about state budgets in turmoil, big, big deficits all over the place. Illinois now hiking its state income tax 67% overnight. Fred Gertz joins us. He's a professor of economics at the University of Illinois, joins us from Urbana. Susan Uran is with us from Washington, managing director of the Pew Center on the states. Let's get a call from your neighbor there, Fred. Van Horn, Iowa. Tom's on the line. Hi, Tom. You're on the air. Everybody's Tom today. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks for having your guests there. It's an important subject. My comment is, being a neighboring state of Illinois, first year at Indiana, and then Wisconsin is going to try and take all Illinois' businesses. Now we had a state legislator, Debbie Durham, in Iowa, is making noises about trying to take business from Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like buzzards gathering around a dead carcass. Why don't we try to take some businesses back that have moved from Iowa to Mexico or China, try to get those businesses that are still based here to bring that manufacturing back. The federal government, the one guest pointed out, doesn't have any more stimulus money left, but we just recently passed a bill that to keep a temporary tax cut, the Bush tax cuts, going for a couple more years
right.
for billionaires and millionaires. The federal government's broke. We haven't even addressed the budget, the wars that were
Tom, let me go to your buzzards question there. I like it. It's interesting. I mean, Fred Gertz, it raises the issue. Thank you, Tom, in Iowa. Fred, it raises the issue of what states can do on their own. I mean, I'm sure, you know, we know what Tom's talking about when he says it looks like buzzards. I hope it's not a dead carcass in Illinois,
right.
But other governors
sure it does look like that. But
well, I hope not. But he's saying, what about national policy here to help us get our economy up off the mat? What about bringing jobs back? You know, not fighting over them as they bleed away here, but get some back from Mexico or China. Does that resonate with you, Mr. Economist?
Not really. States have very little they can do about making jobs happen. The world economy is what it is. And the state of Illinois, the state of Iowa, or whatever, are going to, in large part, live or die by the world economy and how the businesses are willing to or able to compete in that situation.
Yeah, but do we have to be helpless? Do we have to be helpless in that, Fred? Is there nothing that can be done? It is what it is. Goodbye to those jobs and sayonara. That's it. Live with a less.
No, it's not goodbye. It's goodbye to those jobs. Hello to new jobs. It's a creation and destruction. And you win by being on the uptick, getting jobs and activities that are on the upswing, not trying to protect old activities that are no longer economically viable. So you can't subsidize your way out of this situation. You have to create an environment that's good for business. An environment that's good for business means you have to have a good education system. You have to have good infrastructure. You have to have not necessarily super low tax rates, but stable tax rates and an environment that allows firms to grow. And
what about those who are saying, Fred, with the Chinese leader in town, that, look, China protects plenty of its industries and, you know, good for free market economics, but how's that working out for this country? We're in such dire situation here. Is China really got an open market when it comes to an unsubsidized, when it comes to green technology, let's say?
Well, I'm sure they don't, but I'm sure that we're not going to help ourselves by protecting ourselves against Chinese imports. What we have to do is to be more aggressive and more vigorous in the world market and be able to do things that the world wants,
yeah.
Such as we produce airplanes, we produce pharmaceuticals, we have all kinds of financial and legal services that are the second to none around the world. So, again, it's very difficult to recreate or recapture our loss of manufacturing employment, but we're manufacturing a great deal now. It's not that manufacturing has gone down in the United States. It's that manufacturing employment has gone down because of economic efficiency, similar to the fact that agricultural employment is way down in the United States, but not because we're producing less agricultural products, because we're doing it much more efficiently.
But it's hard not to be sympathetic with people when they look around and say, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to crank up to make better products, better jobs, while we're cutting back on school funding at the state level. Let me get a call on that front. Brattleboro, Vermont. Edith is calling. Hi, Edith. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, we came from Los Angeles, where the public schools were in pretty bad shape because of Proposition 13, which brought in a lot of good tax money from the middle class to support the schools. And really, we fled. We fled that state. It is in, I mean, no offense to anyone lives there, but it's in ruins.
California, and, you're saying.
Yes, California. And it really has to do with the fear of both state and federal legislators to raise taxes where they need to be to support a vibrant middle class.
But what about the argument that people make that says you raise taxes, you're going to hurt the economy, and that kills the middle class?
Oh, nonsense. I mean, the part about raising taxes and killing the middle class is a specious argument, because what killed the middle class was big business wanting to have cheaper labor, exporting labor overseas, and throwing open the borders to low-cost labor coming in from South America and China.
Edith, we've got it. I appreciate your call. Susan Uran, there's a listener who voted with her feet, left California because the schools weren't up to snuff. You know, she's in Vermont now. But do you see this happening? Are we going to have a new kind of oaky dust bowl thing in reverse, people really leaving states that are in terrible fiscal situation? You know, the governors are kind of jokingly saying they're going to come and look for business from those states, but not really.
Well, and one of the things we like to say is that it matters where you live. So I think people are more and more taking a look at what their states are doing, and if they can, making decisions accordingly. You know, huge percentages of the population don't have the option to move in many cases. So it's not clear whether you're going to see, you know, significant exodus or influx. But, you know, one thing one of the previous speakers noted was that some of the things that, even though state economies don't necessarily control jobs, what they do control is human capital. They are responsible for education. They certainly have a big role to play when it comes to infrastructure. And infrastructure and education are two things that business looks for when it wants to come into states. And I think this is, again, where you're seeing the cuts in many cases in states. They are making far less, they're putting far less revenue into education, everything from pre-K to higher ed. And that's a bad long-term strategy when it comes to fiscal health. Infrastructure, there's estimates of multi-trillion-dollar deferred maintenance that we've got on infrastructure starting to erode. Absolutely critical that states invest there. On the other side of the ledger, there are things that states can cut, and they can cut in ways that actually provide better outcomes for the public. Take a look at sentencing and corrections. There are several states, and Texas has really led the way here on reducing the number of folks who are incarcerated using community corrections programs, drug and alcohol abuse programs,
yep,
and basically cutting their budget significantly, getting better outcomes in terms of public safety, and reducing the fiscal stress on the budget. So there are things states can do.
Susan, I've got people asking here. We've said 46 out of 50 states in trouble, and we've got listeners asking, what are the four states that aren't? Which are they, and what have they been doing something right? Did they just get lucky? What?
Well, there are some states that have been very fortunate, and most of those states are mineral-rich states. So you take a look at Alaska, Montana, North Dakota, and Wyoming. Those are the states that have been able to sort of surf through this recession with a far less of an impact.
Because commodity prices have been up so much, what they're doing well and on, gas, oil.
Yep.
They also didn't have the big run-up. If you look, it used to be we talked about the bi-coastal economy, while the two coasts were doing great and the middle section was doing poorly. But if you look at the middle section of states, Kansas, Nebraska, North and South Dakota, they've done really well and have really low unemployment rates, partially because of agriculture, partially because of minerals, and partially because they didn't have the big excesses to start off with.
Right.
So things change. 5 years from now, it may be completely different, but that's the way it is right now.
Fred, we've got a lot of questions coming here, too, on public pensions and even public pay. I mean, when the knife starts to go in this deep, people really look around, for where they might find something to grab back. Now, I know you're a member of the State University Pension Board, so you've got
right.
maybe a conflict here, but do you hear that in Illinois? We've been paying too much. We've been promising too much. Will those be dragged back? Are those off limits? What, Fred?
Well, we have very serious pension problems in the state of Illinois, and in large part because we've chosen over the last two or three decades not to fund our pensions properly. When you don't put in the amount that you know is necessary, it's no great surprise that 20 years later, when that money is not at work, you don't have enough to pay your bills. So Illinois did enact a very draconian new pension system, but it only applied to new employees starting January 1st of 2011, so there will be some substantial savings in the future, but right now those savings haven't materialized yet. And the question in Illinois, which is maybe specific to Illinois, is whether you can cut benefits to existing employees. We have a constitutional amendment that most people believe says you can't do that, so Illinois is a little bit more strapped than some other states, but there's still interest in trying to find ways not just to reduce pensions for new employees, but also to restrict the rate of growth for existing employees. And that's a major problem. But I want to emphasize that for Illinois, not necessarily for California and New Jersey, but for Illinois, much of that has come from pension underfunding in the past, not necessarily from generous benefits that have been bestowed by the government.
Understood. But under this pressure, in this pressure cooker, Susan, do you see beyond Illinois grab backs on the way for public pensions, public pay? Is it possible? Or you know, many will say wrong, others will say, what do you see coming, Susan?
Well, I think pensions, and it's not just pensions, it's also the health care benefits that states have promised for their public sector employees. We did a study a couple years ago called the $1 trillion gap, which showed that states basically were $1 trillion short in terms of saving what they had promised for their public sector employees, and that's health care and pensions. About half that $1 trillion was health care. So it's a serious problem. By and large, states tend to trim benefits for new employees, employees yet to be hired. That's by far the easiest thing to do. The problem with that is it doesn't really deal with the liability that the states have already incurred. In many states, that's off limits, either constitutionally or legislatively. They simply can't touch benefits for existing retirees. That said, we have three states, South Dakota, Colorado, and Minnesota, mm-hmm. each of whom has put in place they've cut the cost of living adjustment for their current retirees. This is unusual, and in all three states, that is now in litigation. So we'll see where the courts come out on that. And depending on where the courts come out, that may change the landscape a little bit for whether there are options for states. It's going to vary state by state, though.
Hey Fred, here's a listener in Vermont again saying, okay, we all hate tax hikes, but 3% to 5%, that's what Illinois has just done. What other taxes does Illinois have? 5%, this listener writes, is nothing. You know, they're saying you've got people around the country paying much more than that. Have you just been skating on low taxes? Maybe 5% was overdue. I don't know, Fred.
It certainly was overdue given our level of spending. One thing that Ray Long said quite a long time ago in the program was that Illinois has very high local taxes. We have one of the highest property tax levels in the country. So our low level of state spending and low level of state taxes is offset to a certain extent by relatively high local property taxes. But again, the listener is correct that a 5% tax rate is not horrendous and something most states can live with. Our tax, though, starts at the very beginning. So once a taxpayer's income goes above $2,000, the taxpayer starts paying at 5%. So it hits low-income people relatively hard. But again, it's not disqualifying. It's not putting us out of the range of most other states. That's not true with the corporate tax. The corporate tax, when you take into account the tax increase plus some other taxes, we're top two or three in the country.
Huh?
And if you put on the federal rate, we're probably one of the highest tax places in the world for corporations. So the competitiveness concern is more, I think, a focus of the business side, the corporate tax, than the other, and that's a serious problem we have to face.
Does Illinois think that these companies won't float away? You've got Caterpillar sitting there. They've made some unhappy noises about this. They're going to be...
have ways, it's called tax planning, where they may actually move, they may actually rearrange their business in such a way to reduce their tax liability. But the thing about Illinois that you have to remember, states don't like higher taxes. They also don't like states that are on the verge of insolvency and are paying their bills, where the future is in real doubt. So Illinois dug itself into a hole where the option was either do some really drastic things in terms of cuts and also not paying its bills, or get some more money. I think we erred on the side of too high a tax increase, but I think we did in fact need a tax increase. But what we're lacking is the spending discipline that's yet to be determined whether that will come or not.
One more call here from Arlington, Massachusetts. Glenn is calling. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air. Our time is short, my friend.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My point is that when I hear this talk about people not wanting to pay for government, I think we're not looking at the elephant in the room, which is that the concentration of wealth is the worst it's been since 1929, and we know that has messed up the entire economy. People are really strapped. I don't think they're unwilling to pay. I think they can't pay. I don't think we can blame citizens who are out of work, working two jobs, not knowing what to do about their own child care, all these other problems that people are facing, and here we're going to throw more taxes on them. We need to get the money redistributed so people can help themselves better and help solve some of these problems through new visionary thinking.
I appreciate your call, Glenn. So many elephants in this room. Susan, is that a piece of the problem here? I mean, you hear Glenn's complaint. People are up against the wall, and then they face cutbacks and higher taxes. Is it a distribution issue, Susan?
Well, there's no question that the sort of the public is suffering from the impact of the recession, and I think it complicates things for the states in terms of adding to those pressures.
But Glenn's asking you to make distinctions here when you say the public. He's saying there's an awful lot of people who are suffering more because they're not in on the gravy train.
Well, you know, that's a tough one to determine. That's a, to some degree, a philosophical argument. I think one thing that's not philosophical, though, and you look again at state budgets, the impact of the recession in terms of driving people onto Medicaid, unemployment insurance, and other things has really increased the fiscal stress on state budgets. So, you know, whether you can ask the public to kind of help out any more in terms of tax increases is a really excellent question. But there is no question that the impact of the recession is also is really having an even more significant impact on that fiscal stress.
Fred, we've just got a couple seconds here, but the new bite starts right at the bottom, you say. People making $2,000 a year, their taxes are going up in Illinois.
Right, or if they have family, it would be somewhat more than that, but it starts very, very early.
Wow.
The problem in addressing the question of the last caller, we don't have the option of changing the distribution of income for the country or the world. We have to deal with what's available, and you have to ask yourself, would low-income people be better off paying slightly more in taxes, or would they be better off giving up a great deal of public services that are coming from the state? And I suspect that on balance, they're gaining more from the public services than they are losing from the taxes. So
those may be going away, and we hear it. States facing the music, and they don't have any options. Fred Gertz, professor of economics at the University of Illinois. It's been great having you. Thank you so much for joining us, Fred.
Good to be here.
Susan Uran at the Pew Center on the States in Washington. Thank you, Susan, for your insights.
Pleasure.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. This is On Point.